Hi there, we are James and Dan, two-fourths of the hit UK podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
Each week we get around the microphones with our four favourite facts that we've learned over the last 7 days and sit down to blow each other's minds.
Yeah, here's a fact for you, Dan.
Yep.
In knot theory, a circle of rope without a knot is technically a knot, but it's called a knot.
Very good. I go on here as well. In 2019, a marathon runner with the words Jesus Saves written on his bib had a heart attack, but was revived by a man called Jesus.
That is amazing. If you want to hear more facts like that, search for No Such Thing as a Fish wherever you get your podcasts.
A radio show host called Paul Gallant.
It's Paul Gallant.
Pauly G Show. He's the best in Houston.
The most interactive sports radio show in Houston.
Paul, what's good, my man?
How you doing, Paul?
What are you doing, Paul?
Join the devastation by dialing or texting 713-780-3776.
I love the show. Y'all keep it up.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's Paul Gallant.
You are definitely living in the hindsight world today, Paul.
This is the only... Oh, wait, no, that's the wrong show. Oh, what up, H-Town? Hey, oh, wait, no, that's the wrong show, too. The hell show are we on today? Oh, yeah. We're Paul Gallant Show. I'm Patrick Creighton. I'm not Paul Gallant. Paul Gallant's happy he's not me because he's younger and he has more hair and he's better looking. He's also not working today. Some of us do our jobs. Like Sean Mapes. Sean Mapes does his job. Sean Mapes sits on the other side of the glass. He maintains control over the helm of this show. You follow him on Twitter at Sean A. Mapes, and we know that you do. He also has the flowing locks of hair. But Sean comes to work every day. Unlike other people who may feel entitled. Yes, entitled. Entitled millennial.
He's an entitled millennial. Yeah.
He plays the role very well. Yeah. Of course, you can get in with us today. 713-780-3776, 713-780-ESPN. We have to maintain the gimmick. It is the most interactive show in Houston. So we will continue to operate in that manner as the most interactive show in Houston with the HRNP. Listen along with the text line on Twitter at PCreighton1. You get us on the Twitch stream, twitch.tv/ESPN975, on the ESPN 975 app, ESPN975.com. Tell Google, tell Alexa, play ESPN975. You take us with you everywhere you go. You know you want to, and everyone knows it too. It's okay. You know, it was a pretty good day for the Houston Rockets, from what I am told. From what I have seen, from what I have read, and maybe even what I believe myself, Sean Mapes. But it was a pretty good day for the Houston Rockets, although maybe you could make the argument for the third straight year, they didn't actually have to make any decisions because the decisions were made for them and everything just fell right into line, as almost as if you closed your eyes, you wished on a star, and poof, there it was. How did it come out at number four? Well, with pick number four in the NBA draft, it kind of came out like this.
With the fourth pick in the 2023 NBA draft, the Houston Rockets select Amen Thompson from Oakland, California, an overtime elite.
So at the number four pick, the Houston Rockets take a 20-year-old young man who can jump single buildings in a single bound. Has some pretty good handles, has excellent court vision, can defend multiple positions at 6'7" and 215 pounds. Amen Thompson, Sean, when you were watching the draft last night, because we know you were watching the draft last night, you weren't busy watching other things like Firefly Lane or Bridgerton or things like that. You were watching.
Yeah, need to catch up on those.
The NBA draft is what you were doing. And when you got to see how the draft kind of shook out exactly as expected, at one, at two, at three, at four, Amen Thompson, were you in your happy place at that moment in time, Sean Mapes?
Yeah, because like you said, everything had kind of gone to plan up to that point, or up to in the mock drafts and such, which that doesn't always happen. But, yeah, it was more of a relief of like, okay, they got the guy. They didn't try to get cute with it or anything. They didn't – they – Amen Thompson, who after the draft – and this always happens, like, after the draft, they're like, actually – he was number two on our board. Like, the Rockets loved Amen Thompson. And so, you know, if they're running the team, you kind of have to trust their evaluation of these guys. Like you said, the last two drafts before this one were very similar in that at number in 2021, at number two, you just pick either Cade or Jalen. And then at last year, there's a top three. They're number three. They picked the third guy. They picked Jabari Smith Jr. And then later in the draft, they made some good picks with Tari Eason and Apurin Sengun. So you kind of trust the process, so to speak, in that way. And yeah, Amen Thompson, like you said, crazy athlete. Him and Jalen Green is going to be nuts to watch. He just needs to work on a jump shot.
Well, certainly needs to work on a three-point shot where he shot 23%, playing against essentially just graduated high school competition. Now, they did play some foreign teams, and, you know, so they played some teams that had a higher talent level, and he did play very well in those games. You know, Amen Thompson actually, you know, he and his brother Asar Thompson, who went 4-5, by the way, and become the first brothers to ever go in the top 10 in the NBA draft. But like, you see, like, Asar has become more of the three-point shooter. And Amen has become more of the ball handler, the vision guy, finishes at the rim very well.
You can tell that they play together, and Amen Thompson was the point guard, and Asar was the shooting guard.
Oh, yeah. and actually, last year they played together. The year before, they did not.
Oh, they didn't?
So last year, they kind of reunited back together. And I mean, think about all the guys who didn't play college basketball who went early in the draft. You know, of the top five guys, three of them didn't play college basketball.
Four of them. It was Victor went to
– played in France.
Was in France. Brandon Miller, obviously at Alabama. Scoot Henderson was at G League Ignite.
Oh, that's right. Scoot Henderson the twins was G League. So four of the elite. Top five did not play college basketball. That's crazy. It's changing the dynamics. And, like, you know, I understood a few years ago why would guys want to play for G League Ignite. Well, because if you don't want to go to college, like if school is not your thing, but pro basketball is, it finally gave you a way to get to the NBA because of their stupid one-year rule thing. It gave you a way to get to the NBA and put some food on your plate at the same time. You know, now there's different ways to do that now, as we've seen guys play overseas. Overseas leagues have now allocated, all right, well, you could have like one American player if they haven't played in the NBA before type thing. There are now different avenues to get into the NBA. And Amen Thompson, look, 6'7" point guards, there's not a lot of those guys. And to be able to guard three positions, I would say defense was not a strong point of the Houston Rockets for the last couple of years. I would also say that if you still consider Jalen Green to be the top young player on the Rockets and his biggest weakness is playing defense, having a guy next to him in the backcourt who can be a lockdown defender, that's not a bad idea. And look, if you could ever learn how to hit a three, and look, you can learn how to shoot. You can learn how to shoot in the NBA. Lonzo Ball learned how to shoot in the NBA. If Lonzo Ball, with that janky shot, could learn how to shoot in the NBA, damn near anybody can. And I can say that because I watched Patrick Ewing come into the NBA, and he couldn't hit the sink from the shower, and he wound up becoming one of the better shooting big men of all time. So you can learn to shoot. I don't have any issue with the pick. I was interested to see if they would stay in the pick if the top three guys went as expected. They did. But the Rockets did not make a trade out or a trade down or a trade of. On a draft night, Sean, where there were not a lot of trades. Usually the NBA draft night in the NBA is like, you know, one of those holiday auctions where everybody picks a prize and then they spend the next 3 hours trading them with other people.
Yeah, yeah.
There wasn't much going on in that regard. This was a strange NBA draft in that regard because usually the NBA, there's like 10, 12 trades that go on. Not a ton of activity.
No, there's just, I mean, there's only two in the lottery. There's a, I think, 7 and 8 Pacers and the Wizards flopped picks, which always, I always wonder why that happens, where they trade up from 8 to 7 and then back from 7 to 8. And then Dallas and OKC, yeah, flipped 10 and 12. Other than that, pretty clean night.
And a couple of second-round picks got exchanged, mm-hmm. you know? The Rockets then would pick at 20. And it would be unusual to find a player that you may have been considering at 4 to be available at 20. It might be unusual to find a player that was most commonly mocked in the top 8 to be available at 20. Yet when 20 came around, here is the name you heard.
With the 20th pick in the 2023 NBA Draft, the Houston Rockets select Cam Whitmore from Villanova University.
That is what we call theft. There's no way Cam Whitmore should have been at 20. I don't care if he went to his, you know, team meetings, looked the other team's GM in the face, and called him a buttmonger. 6'7", 235-pound guys who bulldoze their way into the lane, who, those guys don't grow on trees. And, you know, he's a guy who projects to continue to grow as a three-point shooter. He's only 18. He hasn't even turned 19 years old yet. You know, Big East freshman of the year, Big East rookie of the year. Averaged 12.5 points, 5.5 boards, steal and a half a game, shot 34.5% from 3 at 18. That usually projects upward, just, you know, for those of you keeping score at home, we know you are. Shot 70% from the line. All the talent is there that says, you know, this kid definitely should not be available at 20. And, like, when you fall, like, I see, I'm not going to say he's going to be a Hall of Famer like Aaron Rodgers, but I see the Hall of Fame size chip on his shoulder for the epic slide down, which, of course, was one of the big themes of draft coverage. They kept saying, oh, well, we don't. Cam Whitmore hasn't gone yet. Cam Whitmore hasn't gone yet. Cam Whitmore hasn't gone yet. You know that takes a toll on a guy's psyche. Eventually, they start like, all right, well, what the hell's going on? That he finally got drafted, well, you know there was a relief there. Yeah, at what point, you're like, oh, my gosh, if I don't get drafted soon, you know, if this team doesn't take me and that team doesn't take me, how the hell am I going to get out? I'm not going to get out of the first round. But he definitely seems like a guy who will be highly motivated. Do you think Ime Udoka is going to like the fact he's going to have a highly motivated bulldozer on his wing?
Yeah, exactly. And the shooting prowess that you mentioned that he showed, again, playing college basketball after just turning 18. Because last year, he had just turned 18, and he was playing in the Big East. So I do think that at 20, he's a good kind of dart throw, so to speak, of, you know, if at 4 he didn't really stack up to Amon Thompson, but he was relatively close, at least that's what the Rockets would lead you to believe. And at once he get to like, I think once he got to like 10 or 12, they're calling teams trying to trade back up to get Cam Whitmore. Obviously, none of those deals happened, and he fell all the way in their lap at 20. You have to like it just as a bet on talent, you know, whatever caused him to slide. For the Rockets, it matters a little bit less because he's the second of their two first-round picks, and they didn't have to give up anything to go get him.
He's a 6'7" guy who could shoot. So what do you think was the biggest offensive weakness of the Rockets last year?
Shooting.
Couldn't shoot their way out of a paper bag. They got guys who really fit what they want to do, especially under Ime Udoka. They are – you thought the Rockets might make a deal because, holy cow, are they a young team. And at some – like, somebody has to be the veteran of the group. You know, somebody not named Jayshon Tate has to be the veteran of the group,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So it was – look, they got more really terrific young talent. And we will talk with Salman Ali of Red Nation Hoops at 11:15, so about an hour. He'll give us more info on the Rockets and the draft and maybe what they do next. But speaking of next, Rob Manfred hates baseball and Houston and life. Next.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's Paul Gallant. Join the conversation by dialing or texting 713-780-3776.
Hey, Sean, do you have access to the text line?
No, I don't, actually.
Me neither. I don't know some of that. Like, every week, it does this whole, all right, you don't have access, we have to send a text message to somebody. And whether or not somebody gets that text message in time determines whether or not I have text access this week.
Mm.
So don't bother texting. Call us, 713-780-3776, or get on Twitter, at PCreighton1, at Sean A. Mapes, or get on the Twitch stream, twitch.tv/ESPN975. That's how you and I and Sean can all coordinate and commiserate. I always thought it would be really hard to be a worse commissioner of baseball than Bud Selig. To be the guy who deliberately turned a blind eye to steroids, waited for Congress to threaten their antitrust exemption, and then not only, but okay, well, now we're going to clean it up, but we're also going to blackball all the guys that not only did we give the okay to, but paid them exorbitant sums of money to save the game in the process. Hey, who wants to have a tie in the All-Star game? Bud Selig was the worst of the worst. He wasn't even an independent commissioner. He was just one of the owners. So they just made it a big old boys club. It'd be really hard to be worse than car salesman Bud as owner. I mean, let's not forget one of the very first things car salesman Bud did was he got in bed with his good friend Jerry Reinsdorf. They told the union to take a hike and basically caused the 94 strike that wiped out a World Series. That was like his first order of business. The blood on the knife with Faye Vincent's blood on it wasn't even dry yet. And they were already forcing a work stoppage. How are we going to save it? Let's hit more home runs. How do we do that? Let the players take steroids. How do we encourage that? Pay them more. We won't have any policy on it whatsoever. Bud Selig was the worst right up until Rob Manfred. Isn't that amazing? I never thought it could be possible. Rob Manfred has not only made it possible, Rob Manfred is making Bud Selig basically look like Peter Ueberroth. For the guy who has just sullied baseball at every chance he gets. Let's start with turning a blind eye to electronic sign stealing. Then let's scapegoat one single team for doing it and give them unprecedented punishment. Let's call the World Series trophy a piece of metal. Let's sweep under the rug another team that had now been caught twice. Let's spend millions of dollars to help the team in the South Bronx cover up a letter that I wrote them about cheating. Usually when you have a bad situation that affected you, affected your sport, you want to put it behind you and move forward. You notice you never hear Roger Goodell talking about Deflategate. You never hear Roger Goodell talking about Spygate. You don't hear any of those things. You want to put that behind you. We're moving forward. Don't ask me about Spygate. Ask me about the great teams that we have who are competing this year for a tremendous postseason run leading up to a Super Bowl. No, that's not what Rob Manfred does. Rob Manfred, yeah, this happened 6 years ago, and we announced our punishment at the beginning of a season, now 4 seasons ago. But let me reopen this wound because, you know, my sport doesn't have enough bad things to talk about. And any chance that we can, you know, fix this idea, you know, you notice what happened last year as the Astros kind of became the redeemed team, won that title, that kind of justified the first title, got the whole, oh, you guys only won because you cheated. Yeah, wrong. Well, here's Rob Manfred bringing it all back full circle because he just can't help it. Rob Manfred did an interview with Time Magazine, where he said he'd like a do-over on some of the decisions surrounding the Houston situation. Not a do-over regarding the Yankees. Not a do-over regarding the Red Sox on two different occasions. But only a do-over with the Houston Astros. Manfred said, I'm not sure I would have approached it with giving players immunity. Once we gave players immunity, it puts you in a box as to what exactly you're going to do in terms of punishment. I might have gone about the investigative process without that grant of immunity and see where it takes us. Starting with, I'm not going to punish anybody. Maybe not my best decision ever. Every time you think he has reached peak jackassery, Rob Manfred finds a way to also tell you to hold his beer. What possible good could come from Rob Manfred just openly speculating? Well, you know, maybe I should have done this or maybe I should have done that. In public, in the middle of a season. Oh, also, right before the Astros are about to go play the Los Angeles Dodgers, who they beat in the 2017 World Series. It's almost like, you know, last year the Astros started to get a few positive press parts from different members of the national media, and Rob Manfred just wanted to remind everybody, hey, orange team bad. Now, it doesn't matter the fact that Manfred's memo specifically outlined punishment would be towards management and authoritative figures, managers, GMs, owners, etc., and that it never mentioned anything about player punishment. Also, what was he going to do? Suspend the whole damn team? We're going to compromise the integrity of a baseball season by saying, all right, Houston, this year you're going to play your AAA team and everybody else gets to keep all their major leaguers. I don't think that was actually feasible also. None of the things that Manfred addresses in this interview serve any positive purpose to the sport. And all it does is rehang a scarlet letter on the Houston Astros. Like, well, you know, we'll just burn that team again because who cares? Like, is baseball in such a bad situation as they made record money last year? Is baseball in such a bad situation that we have to have 29-1 again? Well, we need to get more viewership. Let's make everybody hate the Astros again. If you look at the current Astros team, and active players who are still on this team from 2017, it's Jose Altuve and Alex Bregman. That's it. Those are the only active players still on the team. And that's because it's on IL. Last year you had Verlander, you had Yuli, they're both off playing elsewhere now. What was the point? Other than for Rob Manfred to make an ass out of himself, scorn Houston, scorn the Astros, and make people in L.A. just rile them up a little more for this 10-game road trip the Astros are about to go on that starts at Dodger Stadium, home of the most fights in the stands and in the parking lot of any stadium in baseball. Well, we're going to talk with Evan Drellick of The Athletic. Evan Drellick is the one who broke the story with Ken Rosenthal at Mike Fiers, has written two books on the subject. Believe it or not, the books were actually fairly written. I've read both of them. But we're going to talk with Evan Drellick about Rob Manfred and these comments and the idea of why are we discussing this now. We'll talk to him next.
Back to the Paul Gallant Show, coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Pat straight in for Paul Gallant. Paul Gallant Show, ESPN 97.5, 92.5. Joining us right now on the HRMP guest line, senior baseball writer for The Athletic. He and Ken Rosenthal broke the story with Mike Fiers. Yes, Mike Fiers, the rat, the trader, call him whatever you want. Broke the story with Mike Fiers. On the Astros sign-stealing scandal, it was the author of the book Winning Fixes Everything. If you haven't read it, it was actually very well written, and it's very fairly written. It's not an Astros hate book. I know I read it cover to cover. Joining us, Evan Drellick. Evan, thanks for taking some time with us today. How you doing?
That's quite an intro. Good morning, Patrick. Thanks for having me.
Well, listen, I know you take a lot of scorn in this city because you broke the story. You did a lot of the investigative report. You kind of take a lot of shots for that, not necessarily fairly. But I've always thought that your coverage has been pretty even-handed and pretty fair. You don't generally take gratuitous shots. Everything you've done has been based in fact. I thought your book was very well written. I also think that of all the people to speak to about the things that Rob Manfred had to say in Time magazine, you're one of the most educated people on the planet to discuss about it. That's why I wanted to talk with you. These comments, like Rob Manfred not having a great week and a half on comments between the Oakland Athletics and now the Houston Astros. But I guess first question that I have for you, and this look, it's a straight up opinion. What is the benefit to Rob Manfred, to baseball, for him to go open up an old wound instead of trying to move on from it?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I mean, I think that kind of leads to the question of, is he playing some sort of five-dimensional chess here? Is he willing to answer that question in a different way than he has before? Because he's an asset in different ways before. If you go back and look at the long ESPN profile on Manfred from last year by Don Bonatta Jr., it says in there that Manfred didn't want to rehash any of that Astros stuff, right? So something changed. Now, what is that something that changed? I'm not sure. It could really be as simple as he likes to sometimes give direct answers to things, and he might have just felt at this point, well, all right, 3 years have passed, and I can kind of acknowledge this now. I see people speculating he's trying to take heat off of the A's. Look, Rob Manfred making one comment about the Astros isn't going to change the A's situation, right? That's not a wise approach. So, I'm not sure. It really might have just been a commissioner answering a pretty direct question.
Now, he stated, look, he goes on the record here and says, you know, maybe not punishing anybody, quote, maybe not my best decision ever. The original memo that he had put out very specifically addressed punishment for, you know, management, for people in charge, decision makers, owners, GMs, managers. It did not specify anything for players. I don't understand why he would say, well, you know what, maybe I should have done something. I shouldn't have taken that off the table. He gave Astros players immunity because, from what he had said previously, he wanted to really find out what happened. They didn't give Red Sox players immunity, and they stonewalled him. How do you believe this would have played out if he had not given immunity to the Astros players?
Yeah, so there's some nuance to this. I think ultimately the reason, why do you care whether you can find stuff out? You care whether you can find stuff out so that you can punish, right? The ultimate question I think Manfred was solving for when he gives immunity is, am I going to be able to make these punishments stick? And in his head, he's saying that's the goal, that it would be worse to look bad by trying to punish and having the punishments overturned. There are a few reasons the punishments could have been overturned. I personally think the argument that if we didn't give them immunity, if MLB didn't give the Astros players immunity, we, MLB, could not have found out what happened is silly. It was already out. Ken Rosenthal and I wrote about it. John Boy and others found video, found audio. We had a player on the record. We had other people. And if you look at the MLB investigation that they end up doing, they talked to, what, 60-something people? Maybe it was more than that. I believe it was maybe high 60s. You know, huge number of people. So you're basically assuming that every single one of those people is going to get together and deny. I think it's incredibly unlikely you'd have that level of cohesion. And let's say you did. Let's say you had every single person inside, not just coaches, players. You're talking about a wide swath of staff, okay? You have every single person down to a man saying the exact same thing. Well, then what's the commissioner faced with? It's a choice. It's, do I believe what was already on the record and published? Do I believe what my eyes and ears are telling me? Or do I believe this, you know, presumably concerted effort to lie? He could still try to punish anyway at that point, right? It all comes back to the fear that the punishment would get overturned. And so I think the really most interesting thing about what Manfred is saying here is, you know, I should have just tried. And if it got overturned, maybe that's still better than what I ended up dealing with. That's my interpretation of this, is that he's saying having, you know, punting on the effort to try to punish, in the end, maybe not the best thing. I might have just rolled the dice.
We're talking with Evan Drellick of The Athletic, senior baseball writer. Evan, I understand that point of view, right? Maybe I could have tried. Maybe I should have tried. But how do you go public with that during a season now, four seasons later? Like, I don't see how. Well, you know what? This is going to improve my Q rating with the public, because it doesn't. This is going to increase interest in baseball. It doesn't. All it did was it riled up more fans to go back to Orange Team Bad. Let's hate the Astros. There's two guys on the team right now from 2017, by the way. But let's go back to hating the Astros, and everything they do is bad. And let's go throw things to the bus and bang some trash cans. And like, I don't see any upside to these comments in any way, shape, or form. And you look at every other sport, particularly the NFL, they have something that goes on. They have to insert a punishment. They don't go back and talk about it again. They're moving forward. You're not getting Roger Goodell go back on the record about something that happened 5-6 years ago. I don't understand why this would even be something Rob Manfred would discuss.
Yeah, look, I wrote a column the other day about Manfred's comments on the A's and how they didn't surprise me. And how there had been a press conference early in the year. It was more of an event where he spoke. You know, there was a moderator. It was Tom Verducci, where I was very impressed. And that was the one that surprised me, because he was speaking, kind of acting differently. No, I don't think there is some great justification for doing it when he did it. This interview, I think if you read that Time story, I think it says the interview was conducted in May. You know, and there's a portrait he sat down for, right? So this was clearly like a planned feature. You know, this wasn't an off the cuff thing, and it does sound like he said this, I guess at this point, maybe about a month ago. You know, the only if you kind of pay attention to his style, he is a lawyer, and he is very lawyerly in his interactions, and typically his responses to questions are somewhat direct. That doesn't mean he won't obfuscate. That doesn't mean he won't misdirect you. That doesn't mean he won't mislead you. But he will typically kind of answer a question, head on in the way you asked it. And, you know, for whatever reason, the guy decided that this was the time I want to express a little regret about the Astros. Why would that be? Well, you know, he is up for re-election presumably that would happen later this year. It's been 5 years since he got his last extension. Maybe he's trying to signal to other owners or people who are unhappy that, hey, I should have done better here. Who knows? Or maybe he was just answering a question. I don't think there's an easy five-dimensional chess answer to this, though.
No, but I do appreciate, look, the fact that, hey, he's up for a contract renewal. Well, once you introduce that aspect to it, I didn't realize he was up for a contract renewal, that always changes things. You know, why do politicians suddenly take left turns? Well, they got bad feedback on something, so they're trying to make nicey on it. And, you know, as much as Rob Manfred is a lawyer, he's also kind of a politician when it comes to the other owners of baseball. Sure. And how he handles them. So he talks about maybe I shouldn't have taken punishment off. If we just go to straight hypothetical, since the door Rob's opening, what kind of punishment could you levy on an entire team that doesn't compromise the integrity of your season?
Yeah, and look, this was one of the arguments at the time. You know, if you had tried to punish, you already had Astros players who had moved on. It was one of the complicating factors. Well, that's going to annoy owners of other teams. I just signed this guy. Now you're suspended. Like, I think Marwin Gonzalez, if I'm remembering right, might have just signed a free agent deal, maybe with Minnesota. I could be getting dates wrong at this point, but you know, you look around and go, if you're an owner of another team, you're not going to like that. I always thought the question that would have been hardest is, you know, hitters versus pitchers, people who use the system versus might not have used the system. You know, how do you divvy that up? You know, do you just say, okay, you remember the Astros, you're getting X games. Well, what if you only played a few games with the Astros? How many games do you get there? It's a really difficult assignment to figure it out. And look, I do think that if Manfred had tried to punish, if he did not grant immunity, and then at some point issue suspensions, I do think the union would have gotten some either entirely vacated or reduced. Not because of the fact-finding question. Not because of this question of, did the Astros cheat? It would have been because of the question of, well, what had management done and prescribed? It's like a labor law, labor relations issue. You know, they have to set rules clearly. And there would have been a pretty strong argument that they didn't. And in fact, Manfred and the league had sent out this memo every year, not every year, but 17, 18, 19, and it got progressively stronger on its stances on electronic sign stealing. And it was very clear, we're going to hold the GM and the manager accountable. And the 2019 version of that memo explicitly says, basically, we're not holding the players accountable. We're GM and manager, and oh, by the way, not the players. So you try to punish when you said that. You know, the union's going to have a really good case to get it overturned. And so, again, that's why it goes back to this kind of deeper question. Would Manfred have done better for himself or for the league, you know, for public relations and public perception, had he at least tried and failed? Is that a better or worse outcome than what ended up happening, than the uproar that the lack of punishments caused?
Here in Houston, the biggest gripe for this, for Astros fans, is going to be, you know, you caught the Red Sox twice, and the only thing they got was a video guy got suspended. You caught the Yankees, you sent them a letter, and then you and baseball spent millions of dollars with the Yankees trying to hide it. In the course of the Astros investigation and other investigations, you know, they turned up what could be considered evidence on another dozen and a half teams, and all of it just kind of vanished. Why is there such a target on the Astros when every other team, sign stealing was a league-wide problem? The Astros just took it to another level because they banged a trash can or a massage gun, and other teams were still flashing signs to the batters or to the coaches to flash to the batters. The Astros took it. Look, the Astros did take it to another level, but it was a league-wide problem. Why does this continue to be, man, the Astros, but then when it comes to the Yankees, the Red Sox, other teams, we're just, that never happened?
Yeah, I wrote in my book, I imagine I said it with you and certainly with others, you know, the Red Sox investigation is very unsatisfying. It's this notion that you'd said you're going to hold the manager and GM accountable. Well, even in the report you put together, MLB puts together on the Red Sox, says Alex Cora it didn't properly inform some people, maybe it was the clubhouse, whatever the phrasing was. And then it's just all on JT Watkins, right? It was convenient. And so the question is, why is it this way? Well, the league has an interest in not having this thing, in not investigating 6, 7, 8 different teams and massively punishing 6, 7, 8 different teams. Now, you know, you said it, and I'll always point it out. The question of severity does matter to many. You can have a debate about whether how far beyond you go breaking a rule matters. Most people in the sport, I would agree with it myself, do look at the Astros situation as different than the Red Sox, Dodgers, Yankees down the list. But you can stand there and say, well, you shouldn't, you know, you can make that argument. But it, basically, there was a little bit of acceptance of, okay, we're going slightly over the line. And then everybody looked at the Astros as just going way, way, way over the line. And so you're left in a spot where you can try to say, well, you can't justify away you going a little over the line. That should be considered over the line too, in a serious way. But that's not how it's been handled, I think, by the public. It's not how it's been handled by the commissioner's office. And I'm leery to vest too much power in the commissioner's office, right? I mean, there was convenience for them in this. There was convenience for them in only fining the Yankees and the Red Sox in 2017, which, by the way, was a big mistake because it didn't send nearly strong enough a message to teams like the Astros or the Red Sox in 2018 that any of this behavior was going to get you in serious trouble. You know, it did not deter. So it's messy. It's complicated. I don't think it's a mystery, though, why the Astros remain a focus. We don't know of any team that's done what they did to that level. And yeah, the league is going to have an interest in not having it expand everywhere. But again, you know, there isn't evidence. I've never seen it. You tell me if you have, of teams doing what the Astros did, not just the base runner system, but the direct relay without a runner on base, entirely and off the field shooting.
No, I mean, other than Joe Girardi with the, Freudian slip of to the batter, I mean, second base. And look, I firmly believe that teams are flashing signs to coaches and batters. But like you said, there's a big difference between flashing signs and banging a can, the immediacy of it, the instant translation. You know, you don't have to stare into the dugout or stare at a coach to pick up a sign while you're trying to pick up a baseball. It's much easier and much quicker. I know breaking ball's coming. I agree with you. What the Astros did pushed the envelope further down the line than anybody else did at that time. And why you'd want to do that, and I think the investigation, not just that you want to punish it, but I want to prevent this from happening again. What systems can I create and put in place that make sure I never have to deal with this again? Those to me are obviously the two biggest reasons to have an investigation. Like I said, the fact that Manfred is now, after announcing this, November 2019, that, this is, as you said, a planned sit-down with Time Magazine that happened in May. This wasn't off the cuff. Off the cuff, I'd be more understanding of. You planned it. That, to me, makes it even more questionable.
Yeah, and look, I don't think the questions were planned. I don't think it was like he knew exactly what was coming. I don't know the relationship between that reporter and that outlet, but I would never suggest that the default is to assume he was simply asked something on the spot. But yeah, look, I get it. I understand the question of why now? Why would they be? Why would he want to bring it up right now? And we can play conspiracy theory all day. He wants to get reelected. Maybe he just wants to protect his legacy. Maybe he just feels like enough time has passed. You know, it's hard to know what's in the guy's head on this one.
He's Evan Drellick, senior writer for The Athletic, former Astros beat writer with The Chronicle. He is the author of Winning Fixes Everything. If you haven't read it, I recommend it. It is a very well-written book. I promise if you read it, you're going to learn some things that you didn't know about. Winning Fixes Everything by Evan Drellick. It's a terrific read. Evan, always appreciate your time. Thank you very much. We'll catch up soon.
Thanks, Patrick.
All right, Evan Drellick of The Athletic with us on the HRMP guest line. Obviously, he is more invested, well, let's say more vested in this story as the guy who broke it with Mike Fiers, you know, and previous conversations with him. He knew this story was going to be bigger than him and bigger than anything in baseball. He went to Ken Rosenthal and showed him, hey, this is what we've got. And I think that there's more. And brought Ken into the story because obviously Ken's name carries a ton of weight. And Ken's not going to put his name on something he didn't really believe in. So the fact that there was enough there, Ken Rosenthal put his name on it also, validated everything that was going on. And again, if you're an Astros fan, you have every right to be pissed off. Why the hell is the commissioner bringing this crap up again? It's four seasons removed from the discovery. It's six seasons removed from the existence. There's two guys left on the team. Why the hell are we talking about this now? And how come you never have anything to say about any of the other teams? That is a totally fair feeling and fair subject for any Astros fan. The answer is Rob Manfred's a damn clown. I mean, that's really the answer. All you guys who out there who, you know, don't like Evan or hate Evan because he's the guy who broke the story, he just told you Manfred has handled this wrong time and time and time again. That the Red Sox investigation was a sham. Oh, by the way, all butthurt Dodgers fans, don't play butthurt because the guy who was suspended from the Red Sox now is in your organization helping Mookie Betts and J.D. Martinez hit a whole lot better than they did last year. Sean, we'll have more fun with this on the other side. It's Paul Gallant Show, ESPN 97.5.
Hi there, we are James and Dan, two fourths of the hit UK podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
Each week we get around the microphones with our four favorite facts that we've learned over the last 7 days and sit down to blow each other's minds.
Yeah, here's a fact for you, Dan.
Yep.
In knot theory, a circle of rope without a knot is technically a knot, but it's called a knot knot.
Very good. I go on here as well. In 2019, a marathon runner with the words Jesus Saves written on his bib had a heart attack but was revived by a man called Jesus.
That is amazing. If you want to hear more facts like that, search for No Such Thing as a Fish wherever you get your podcasts.